Well, hi, everyone. You know, it's always great to seek out the experts on various topics. And once again, this is what we've tried to do with today's podcast, because if you've been around for a while, you probably know of the publication. It's called Kiplinger. It's an organization that back in the 1920s, it launched the Kiplinger publication, and which is now the longest continuously published newsletter in the country. Now, in their most current publication, in their recent edition, they tackle a subject, Five Steps to Retire When You Want. Now, that sounds right to me. To get all the details about it, we had a chance to talk to the editor. Her name is Susan Garland. Now, Susan has vast experience reporting on retirement in some major publications, such as the New York Times and Business Week, Fortune, and others. So let's get right in and get a chance to talk with Susan. It's just great having you on the show. And, you know, we hear, Susan, about some of those unofficial numbers that I've heard, at least, that more than 50% of Americans are actually ill-equipped to financially live and be prepared to live through their retirement.
People are just, the economy, especially now, is just coming out of the recession. Bond yields are very bad. A lot of people had got hurt during the housing recession. So their savings have taken a real hit. And a lot of people, and also another big factor is the defined pension plan is disappearing. A lot of people in the past had gotten guaranteed income for life, worked in manufacturing, and even in very small businesses, it was just very common to get a pension plan. And now most companies are not starting pension plans anymore. Many other companies have frozen their plans, and other companies are terminating their plans. So people now, especially the baby boomers in particular, most of them do not have a defined benefit pension plan that provides guaranteed income. So they have to depend on their Social Security and their own personal savings. And Social Security was never meant to be your major income, but people just don't have enough savings to get them through maybe a 30-year retirement these days.
And we, as baby boomers who didn't have a defined benefit plan, were under the the wrong impression, perhaps, that their 401k would suffice, and now we're finding out otherwise.
Exactly. People don't realize that they're not getting this guaranteed income. A lot of people are very confused. And this is what's very scary. I know that there are some rule of thumbs for withdrawing from a retirement plan. And one of them, which is getting a little bit discredited, but basically you could figure out that you can take 4% a year from your savings and then adjusted for inflation. So let's just say you have $1 million portfolio. Most people don't have $1 million portfolios, but I'm making the numbers easy. That means you take $40,000 out a year to live on. If you have a $500,000 portfolio, that's just $20,000 a year. And if that's coming from an IRA or a 401k, then you have to pay taxes on that. That's not a lot of money for people. So that there are a number of strategies you can use to sort of stretch that, but basically a lot of people are starting at a very low end, and they're really going to be struggling, unfortunately, during their retirement years. Unless if they're preparing for retirement now, there are some things they can do to protect themselves.
Well, let's touch on that in just one moment. And the one other point that I might ask you about is the fact that interest rates are so low on bonds and so-called safe investments that the one time that we thought maybe we could live off of that isn't quite as rosy, is it?
It is not rosy. Now, obviously, the interest rates are going to be going up in, you know, a little bit maybe in the future, but not a whole lot. There are other different investments you might be able to look at to get some extra cash, a little bit of a bigger yield. But everything, the bigger the yield, the higher the risk. And that is the rule. So the whole idea is to sort of find maybe other types of investments that, or to structure your portfolio so you can juice it up a little bit, but you still won't be, you know, if you're going to go into very risky, you know, look for that higher yield, you're going to be ending up in pretty high risk ventures. And there are also a lot of scams out there on the internet that people really need to watch out for. When people are desperate for money, there's always somebody who will prey on you. So people have to be very careful.
Yeah, and any of those scams that are current, it seems as though they kind of come and go a little bit, but anything that we should be particularly aware of?
Well, I mean, there's a new scam a minute. So it's basically anybody who is promising you, 10% for the rest of your life, 10% a year or 15% a year, you stay away from. And not only that, what you need to do if somebody is offering you something like that, anybody, whether it's your neighbor, I mean, look at the Bernie Madoff situation. These are people who are friends of friends and, people are getting rich. And he was pulling the scam on a lot of close friends. So even in your church or synagogue, you need to be careful as well. What you need to do if somebody's trying to sell you something, especially if it's not traded on one of the exchanges, you need to go to what's called FINRA.org and check it. That's basically the financial regulatory of getting the name of it authority. But that's basically the self-regulating group for the brokers and dealers. And find out, look up your broker or look up the salesperson, see what their record is. If there's no record, you don't want to buy. So be careful.
That's great advice, and that just leads me into one other question. Is this something that someone can go alone on, or what's the, because you're going to have trade-offs either way, whether you do it alone or you pay somebody to do it, what's your feeling about that?
I think that if people really don't know what they're doing, I think they should go to what's called a fee-only certified financial planner. When I say fee-only, that means they do not make money by selling you insurance or selling you stocks, bonds, or whatever. They don't make a commission. You can go to them. There are a number of them. And most of them want to charge you like perhaps 1% a year for managing for the value of your portfolio. But there are a number of planners out there who will sit down with you. They'll charge you for a few hours, maybe $150 an hour, which sounds a lot, but boy, that $500 can save you a lot of money over the long term, help you structure a portfolio, look at your expenses, look at what you have, and help you pick the mutual funds that would work for you at your age with your risk tolerance, and then you can go back for checkup and learn how to sort of buy and sell the funds when you need to. So I would advise that if you want to do it alone, there are other ways you can do it, which if you have time, I could tell you about. But that's what I would do if you're really sort of new to the investing field.
Well, Susan, in the years and experience and research that you've done on this topic of personal finance, what's the biggest mistake that jumps out at you?
I think one of the biggest mistakes that investors make, and we see this all the time, and the numbers come out showing this, is that what they do is they pull out, like a lot of people pulled out during the big downturn. They were scared, and I don't blame them. I was scared too. And then what they do when they see the market going up, they get back in. And so what they're doing is that they're doing the opposite of what they should be doing. What they're doing in this case is that they're selling low and they're buying high. And so if you can, you should have a stock allocation. I call it the sleep well at night, swan factor, which is you don't want to be all in stocks. Never, especially if you're a baby boomer, you want to maybe be 60% in stocks or 50%. You want to be what makes you feel comfortable. If you're not sleeping at night, then you shouldn't be in that allocation in the first place. But if you have a 50% allocation, the market goes down, try, to get through the jitters, because look what happens, and it's historic. The market will go up at some point, we hope, of course, the minute I say it, goodness knows what's going to happen, but it will happen to my portfolio as well, because I try not to sort of respond to every up and down of the market. And another thing that the investors need to do, and that is to be diversified across all different asset classes. So you figure out your allocation. Maybe if your age is 60, there's a rule of thumb, which is just a rule of thumb. It doesn't work in all cases. You know, take 100, subtract your age, and that should be your bond, you know, your stock portfolio. So so if you're 60, that's 60% bonds, 40% stocks. But, you know, people these days, you want to be maybe a little bit more in stocks for the long term, because those are your growth allocations, your growth investments. And then when you buy those stock mutual funds, because those are the easiest things to find, buy index funds. They're the cheapest. They're, you know, that's a way to save money, too. They're cheaper. They because fees key to eat up your investments as well. A lot of numbers out there that show this over time. So index funds are very cheap. And go to Vanguard, Fidelity, T. Rowe Price, and look for index funds. They basically follow a benchmark, S&P 500, large company benchmarks, and get small company index funds, large company index funds, bond funds that are index funds, and just diversify over a lot of different investment categories.
Susan, we've been talking a little bit about how people can stretch their dollar, and I'm sure you've been hearing, too, about the popularity, perhaps, in moving to other countries and living there. Costa Rica, Panama is an example.
And this sort of goes into how to save money, and there are two ways, you know, there could be two ways to do it. One thing is people are working longer, either in their current jobs or people are looking for that second career that or a type of work that sort of gives them a lot of fulfillment. So, and a lot of people are moving abroad to save money. So this is brings two of these things together. Another way is to stretch your nest egg over a longer period of time. You could go to a low-cost area, and you know, South America in particular, a number of countries that that will really good for retirees, Ecuador, Panama, and so forth. And some people, or Venezuela, some people could set up companies. Like we wrote a story recently about these two sisters who went to Nicaragua. They had loved the country, and they always they had other careers in other fields, and they established a B&B. Another company, I think, went to Argentina. They opened a vineyard. Now they're bringing other people in to buy pieces of it so that other retirees can have a stake in that, too. You can't do this blindly. You need to, it helps to speak the language, but it also helps to do your due diligence. You live there for a while. You spend long periods of time there, so it's not just a vacation. We see all the wonderful parts. You need to get help down there to sort of so you understand what the market is. Whether you're starting a new business or you're just basically freelancing or telecommuting, you may be able to work longer for your employer if you could do the work by telecommuting or freelancing, move to a cheaper area, and then you could, you know, bring that extra money in, cheaper place to live, and you're sort of doing a twofer in stretching your retirement nest egg.
And, of course, we all have our retirement dreams. It includes owning a boat and spending our leisure time on that, or hitting the roads and traveling the United States in an RV.
Yeah, we've done the motorhome story, pitfall story, recently, and we did a story on the pitfalls of buying a boat. All dreams, both dreams of retirees. I'm going to retire. I'm going to travel across the country in an RV. Go to all the national parks. It'll be great. You know, I could do it all year or half year or whatever. So that's the dream. And the reality is, first of all, they cost a lot of money depending on what you want. Then you have to buy, then there's sales tax that you have to factor in. So, like Texas, for instance, has a levy of 6.25%. So if you're buying a $50,000 RV, which is a cheap RV, you're paying $3,100 right there. Then you have to, you know, if you want to finance it, then you have to get the loan. And you can get a loan for 3%. That's good. But you still have to factor in the financing of that loan. Also, you know, maintenance is unpredictable. You have no idea, especially if you want to save money, you're buying a cheaper RV, you're going to have to maintain it. And then you would need to buy perhaps a service plan. So all these things, and then when you hook up to whatever motorhome park you go to, those have fees as well. And don't forget the fuel on these. They're gas guzzlers. So if you are doing a $20,000 cross country road trip, you're going to have to spend plan to spend $7,000 to $10,000 to make that trip. So there you are. You're saving on hotel costs, but you're spending the money on fuel. So you could buy cheaper. You could buy cheaper ones. You could buy one on Craigslist. You better get somebody to take a look at it to make sure it's okay. And you really need to think about the size as well, because do you really want to spend 6 months living in this, really cramped room with your spouse, for 6 months? I wouldn't want to do it, but some people may. But so you need to sort of focus, look at the kind of size of the motorhome. The bigger it is, probably the more expensive it's going to be. And when off season, you're going to want to store it. You're going to have to look at what storage fees will cost, because most communities will not want that big thing on their suburban streets or city streets.
Well, Susan, that's been great. As we wind up, just some final points and tips that maybe you can share with us.
Well, one thing is, if you can't afford it, if you're still working, max out your 401k. I can't remember the numbers. If you're 50 and over, you get to put aside an extra $5,500 a month. So I think it's up to $22,000 a year. Not everybody could afford it, but if you can, you do get that upfront tax break if you're making a pre-tax contribution. So that money compounds tax-free, tax-deferred, until you need it. So that's a really important step to take. And as I said before, take a good look at your spending and see what you can pare down and get rid of. Another, make your retirement plan. Take a look at the numbers. Look at your Social Security statement. Look at all your guaranteed income sources. Consider downsizing in the future. Really don't be blind to this. You just have to be very careful and put together a diversified portfolio. And we hope that it will grow. You just can't ignore this, because it's going to be coming up sooner than you think, and maybe you can work longer, but maybe you'll be getting sick and you won't be able to. So you need to prepare yourself as much as you can.
Susan, thanks so much. It's been great information. Once again, we've been speaking to Susan Garland. She's editor of Kiplinger's Retirement Report. And again, you can get Kiplinger. It's also online, kiplinger.com, and you can find it at the newsstand. Subscription to it is somewhere in the vicinity of $30 a month. Thanks again so much, Susan.
My pleasure.